Good morning. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and it is my great pleasure to serve this joyful, inspiring congregation. Everyone is welcome at our services, whether you're here in person or you're joining us online or you're watching a recorded service. Whether you have come for connection with this community, for respite, for inspiration, you are welcome here this morning. Whether this weekend means for you Juneteenth, Father's Day, Solstice, more work, or all of the above, you are welcome here. It is a beautiful day, which might have rain in it, which is actually a nice thing, created out of mystery, and each of you are a miracle. If you are new today, we have slips in the back of your chairs for you to fill out with your information so you can get more information in your email about our congregation. We have coffee service, both online, where there's conversation that was in your email you got this morning, the link to that. And there's coffee downstairs. And I would just like to let you know a couple of things. One is I am leaving for General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalists next week. That's where we do our business and get together and have conversations about what's important in our faith. And then after that, I'm going to be on study leave and vacation until the middle of August. So I will miss all of you very much and be delighted to be back with you when I return. And I also wanted to let you know that next week we're doing a slightly different service, which is it is the Sunday service for General Assembly, which is an hour and a half service, and we'll have amazing music and preaching and liturgy. It's one of the best services we put on as you use. And so that will be streaming here at 10:30, but it is an hour and a half, so you know that. We also are inviting woofers to go to the Beaverton Pride Parade. And woofers are meeting up outside the library at I think, 10:30. Is it 10:30? Someone wait. It's 10:30, yes, 10:30. It starts at 11, so we're trying to gather. We have lovely rainbow bookmarks with the principals on them to hand out, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So either of those is the way that you can be with us next Sunday. I would like you to take a moment and greet each other. Be sure to say hi to someone you don't know. We will now sing This Joy That I Have, led by Spencer and Kim.
Hello. We don't have the words printed for this, but it's what Karen calls a zipper song, and we've done it before, so some of you know it. This joy that I have, the world didn't give it to me. Repeat. This love that I have, this pride that I have, this peace that I have, and then back to joy. And we'll, Spencer, you'll shout those out.
We'll call out the different words.
This joy that I have, the world didn't give it to me. This joy that I have. The world didn't give it to me. The world didn't give it, and the world can't take it away. Love.
We light the chalice. Oh, dear. We light the chalice this morning in honor of the summer solstice, the longest day of the year. The specific moment that is our solstice, when the Western Hemisphere tips closest to the sun, will be Wednesday morning at 8:57. So be there for it. We celebrate the solstice with this poem by the Reverend David Breeden. The solstice teaches us that darkness comes and darkness goes. The solstices teach us that light comes and light goes. The solstices teach us calmly, silently, to be calm, silent, learning. The solstices teach us, as we circle the sun, that everything flies. The solstices teach us to remember the dark, to remember the light, to remember time, the seasons, and love as we circle the sun. We will now say our affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love one another and our neighbors.
Good morning. My name is Brad Hewitt. My pronouns are he and him. And I want to welcome the rain. I could hear it on the roof as I sat down, and if you look out your windows, it's pouring down. It really is. It's beautiful. So being here in the forest, in the midst of it, it just feels so connecting. So, welcome to the rain. My pronouns are he and him. It's my joy to be your lay leader this morning. It's beautiful, cool, and wet spring morning. I have a poem to read called Mindful by Mary Oliver. Every day I see or I hear something that more or less kills me with delight, that leaves me like a needle in the haystack of light. It was what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside that soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclamation. Nor am I talking about the exceptional, the fearful, the dreadful, the very extravagant, but of the ordinary, the common, the very drab, the daily presentations. Oh, good scholar, I say to myself, how can you help but grow wise with such teachings as these, the untrimmable light of the world, the oceans shine, the prayers that are made out of grass. I'm going to introduce Time for All Ages. Liz, if you'd please come up.
Good morning, everybody. My name's Liz. I'm the Director of Religious Education here at WOOF, and my pronouns are not as important as you probably think they are. Today's story is about Juneteenth. The lesson for today with the children will be about black joy. Any kids who want to come up and sit in the front row and hear the story right up close are welcome. I think parents, you saw on the board outside that we would be outside, we'll be doing bubbles. It's pretty rainy, so I think we're going to move to the breezeway over by the classrooms. So when you exit the sanctuary, if you just go to the left, that's where we'll be with the kids. Today's story is called Juneteenth for Maisie by Floyd Cooper. Maisie wants to play outside, but it's too late. It's getting dark, Maisie. It's time to stay inside. Maisie wants a cookie, but it's time for bed. Not now, little one. It's too close to bedtime. Maisie wants to stay up late, but she's too little. Bedtime's the rule, sweet girl. Why so grumpy, Sugar Bear? Asked Dad. I can't go where I want, have what I want or do what I want, answers Maisie. Well, tomorrow we get to have a celebration, says Dad. What are we celebrating? Asks Maisie. We'll celebrate the day your great-great-great-grandpa Mose crossed into liberty. The day will be celebrated by us and many other families on this day. We call it Juneteenth. Dad lifts Maisie into his arms. I bet you're tired of hearing no all the time. Well, great-great-great-grandpa Mose heard no even more. Grandpa Mose worked in fields that stretched all the way to sunset. He and other slaves would be bone tired, but they had to keep going. Their masters wouldn't let them quit. And as they worked, they thought about freedom. And before they finally went to sleep at night, they prayed about freedom, and they made plans for change and for a better future. Some slaves ran north to freedom, following a bright star in the sky. They sweat, they bled, they cried till those cries were quieted by a single proclamation from a brave president. Grandpa Mose heard that proclamation read from a balcony of a hotel on a warm June day in Galveston, Texas. Grandpa Mose heard nothing but cheers, saw nothing but happiness, felt nothing but pride shared by all of those around him. The cheers became dancing, the dancing became celebrating, and went on and on into the night. Grandpa Mose and the others had found freedom. They continued to work, but this time they were paid for their work. So they worked, and they saved, and they never forgot the moment they had heard, the moment that had changed them forever. But things weren't perfect. Black people still struggled to stand shoulder to shoulder with white people. They still weren't treated as equals. It wasn't easy, but they never gave up. And every year on Juneteenth, they remembered. They marched for jobs. They lobbied for schools and the right to vote. They shouted for opportunity. And every year on Juneteenth, they celebrated and remembered. They learned and they grew. They forgave. They excelled and achieved. They became heroes. Now, sweet Maisie, it's your turn to celebrate just like great-great-great-grandpa Mose. It's your turn, Maisie, to eat some barbecue and drink some strawberry pop. It's your turn to celebrate and to remember. On June 19th, in 1865, soldiers arrived in Galveston, Texas, announcing the end of the Civil War and the end of slavery in the United States. It was 2 years after President Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation, and June 19th is celebrated every year to commemorate the announcement of the abolition of slavery and the emancipation of African American citizens in the entirety of the United States. All right. So, if you would now rise and form arches across our aisleways, we'll sing our children out to their classrooms.
I would like to invite Jane Transier up and her mom, Kim, if she would like to join her. So today, we get the great honor of celebrating Jane Transier as she steps from childhood and youthhood into young adulthood. She has graduated from high school. And she will be attending Oregon State in the fall. Jane started here at Wolf when she was 2 years old. And she's been serving on the Board of Trustees for the last couple of years. So, Jane, we bless you today. May your heart be on fire with wonder and wisdom. May your heart be aflame with love for this life. May your hands be ignited with purpose. May your spirit be aglow with compassion and vision. May you always be courageous, which I know you will, and kind, which I also believe. You are a light unto the world, a miracle, and you carry our steadfast love with you wherever you may go. We are with you. And I would like the congregation to add some words of blessing for Jane, so you can repeat after me. We bless you.
We bless you.
We love you.
We love you.
We are here for you.
We are here for you.
May your life unfold with joy.
May your life unfold with joy.
Amen and blessed be.
Amen.
So we offer you this rose to take with you to remember us and celebrate. You will be missed. And now we have a special musical offering for Jane from Spencer and her mom.
I can't imagine what it would be like to be in high school and then in college today. It's a as we all know, the world has changed so quickly. Week to week, month to month. It takes courage to take these steps. And I think it was Franklin Roosevelt who said that courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is the willingness to take the steps necessary to move forward. I think Jane is certainly exemplifies that sentiment. So this song is about courage. Can stand me up in the gates of hell, but I won't back down. Gonna stand my ground, won't be turned around, and I'll keep this world from dragging me down, but I won't back down.
Together, let us take time for gratitude. Gratitude can remind us how dependent we are on the natural world and other people. Gratitude is the beginning of reverence. Gratitude connects with the miracle of our lives. If you choose, you may now call out, type in the chat, send a text, or whisper in your heart that which you are grateful for in this moment. My dad, Gene Hewitt. Thank you. In another expression of gratitude, we shall open our hands and our hearts to today's offering. Those offerings come in all shapes and sizes, just like people. from paper or electronic money to hands that volunteer here to make coffee, pick up tree limbs, hand out orders of service, or legs that follow around our children during their classes. For this quarter's Donate the Basket, WOOF will donate today's offering in support of a coalition of faith communities, including Congregation Shir Tikvah and the Mental Health Association of Portland, for their winter tent drive. In 2022, over 3,000 people were unsheltered in Multnomah County alone. There's no quick fix for the homeless crisis, and many municipal initiatives fall short of a solution. This initiative will purchase good quality tents over the next several months for distribution in the fall before the heavy rains. All tents will be made available to social service organizations already serving these communities who know where to best direct the need. Tents are not the solution to the crisis, but we can show our compassion by ensuring the most basic of shelter for our unhoused neighbors. If the greeters will please collect the offering. Thank you, Cheyenne. If you'll please join me in our affirmation of gratitude and giving.
Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
We'll now sing hymn number 1053. I think that's in the green teal hymnals. How could anyone ever tell you? Oops. And we're going to stop. Sorry, Kim. We're joys and sorrows first, and then Tracy will introduce it. Thanks.
So there is so much delight in the world. Goodness, love, and beauty that grow within us and all around us. And together we create a circle of celebration for those joys. It's deep enough to hold us all. There's also a lot of pain in the world, a lot of suffering. Each of us knows loss. So together here we create a circle of compassion wide enough to hold all the sorrows in our lives. So we will now have a moment of silent reflection. And when the music begins, please come forward. Come down this aisle and return down this one. And you can put a stone in the water for your joy or for your sorrow. The water is the community of compassion that bears all sorrows. The water is the community of celebration that holds all joys. You may remain seated as we sing, How Could Anyone Ever Tell You? It's in your blue teal hymnal, but it will also be on the screen.
You mean the screen that I'm blocking?
So now is time for meditation, reflection, or prayer, as is your tradition. And today we recognize that it's Father's Day. On this Father's Day, let us hold in love all those who loved their fathers, who had blessed childhoods with fathers who played with them, loved them, and supported them, and celebrate today with joy. Let us hold also those who've been hurt by their fathers, didn't like their fathers, or no longer speak to their fathers, and find today painful. Let us hold those whose fathers have died, and today is filled with sadness, or guilt, or relief. Let us hold everyone who is a father or stepfather in our hearts, those who have found fathering fulfilling, those who abandoned the task, and those who try the best they can. Let us also remember all those who wanted to be a father but never were, and those who are separated from their children by distance or estrangement. Being a father and being in a relationship with a father brings out all our humanness. Let us bless us all, wherever we are, whatever we need, on this Father's Day. Amen. We will have a moment of silence.
I have a reading called To Savor the World or Save It, written by Richard S. Gilbert, and he writes it in response to a poem by E.B. White. So I'll read the original poem first that he responded to. It's hard to know when to respond to the seductiveness of the world and when to respond to its challenge. If the world were merely seductive, well, that would be easy. If it were merely challenging, that would be no problem. But I arise in the morning torn between the desire to improve the world and a desire to enjoy the world. This makes it hard to plan the day. By E.B. White. To which Mr. Gilbert responds, I rise in the morning, torn between the desire to save the world or to savor it, to serve life or to enjoy it, to savor the sweet taste of my own joy or to share the bitter cup of my neighbor, to celebrate life with exuberant step or to struggle for the life of the heavy laden. What am I to do when the guilt at my bounty clouds the sky of my vision? When the glow which lights my every day illumines the hurting world around me? To savor the world or save it? God of justice, if such there be, take for me the burden of my question. Let me praise my plentitude without limit. Let me cast from my eyes all troubled folk. No, you will not let me be. You will not stop my ears to the cries of the hurt and the hungry. You will not close my eyes to the sight of the afflicted. What is that you say? To save, one must serve. To savor, one must save. The one will not stand without the other. Forgive me. In my preoccupation with myself, in my concern for my own life, I had forgotten. Forgive me, God of justice, forgive me, and make me whole. And I have a second reading from Adrienne Marie Brown. Put your attention on suffering, which is constant and everywhere, and it is all you will see. Joy will come and laughter, but you'll find it brief, possibly a distraction. But put your attention on joy, being connected and feeling whole, and you will find it everywhere. Your heart will still break. You will know grief. But you will find it a reasonable cost for the random abundance of miracles and the soft, wild rhythms of love.
Our theme this month is delight. So I have been attending to what delights me. I delight when the sun brightens the pale green tips of the branches of the Douglas fir just outside of my porch. Nowadays, it happens very late in the day, so I sit as the night falls on my porch and bask in that brightness. And I just can't get over the wonder of rhododendrons. I mean, they are just covered with that splashy display of frothy blooms. How is this possible? Or the moon, large and floating on the horizon. Oh, what else delights that first sip of warm, rich coffee on my tongue? The curve of tiny carrot seeds coming up out of the soil. They are so hard to germinate, and I'm so delighted when they arrive. Or a bright red hood strawberry plucked from the plant and savored on my tongue. It is so wonderful. The smile of a baby delights me every single time, as well as the return smile of the parent. They light each other up. The world is full of miracles and wonders. What delights you? You can call into the room what truly, truly delights you. But I am haunted as well. The rise of fascism in the United States is real. The rage of young men who kill randomly, and no one has any control over that. And the whirling, warming weather and the bare nod of concern by those with the power to change things. I am continually shocked by my grocery bill and the price of an Americano these days. And I wonder, how are people who make less than I even getting by? How to hold all the delight and all the pain? I rise in the morning torn between the desire to improve the world and a desire to enjoy the world, writes E.B. White. It makes it hard to plan the day. I recently became obsessed with articulating the purpose of life. I wrestle with this question often. The study of ministry pretty much requires it. Preaching pretty much requires it. And something in my very nature requires it. I want to know this because I want to know how to live every day. What do I attend to? What do I spend my time and money on? How do I decide to do this thing or that thing? Most of us in our ordinary lives don't pay much attention to the purpose of life. Purpose is typically lived out unconsciously, and often it is an actual jumble mix of purposes that affects how we make decisions and how we spend our time and how we live our days. But sometimes we do have to be explicit, because we are recalibrating our lives. We graduated, or had an accident, or the kids moved out, or we had a baby, or a divorce, or a particular birthday, or a pandemic, or the disappearing human rights in part of the United States. So we ask, what is important? What matters? What will I do now? We live in a rather bizarre culture. On one hand, Calvinism still streaks through U.S. society, insisting that what is valuable about us is our work ethic, being productive, being as perfect as we can, job titles, and the demonstration of wealth and worth through what we consume. One must have willpower and drive, we learn, to work when tired and sick, to live under the ticking of a clock, to endure unpleasantness, to learn to see people as resources, and in the land as resources, and not as people, and as something with worth. And it leads to a hierarchy where those who make it by working hard are morally superior to those who do not make it or do not work hard in ways that are deemed useful. And then there's, on the other hand, consumerism, which asks us to be indulgent, to have things and experiences because they please us or we deserve them. Consumerism beckons us with the pleasure and delight of all that can be purchased. And for things that cannot, like love, it offers plenty of accessories to amp up the experience. We are required to move through life, balancing between working hard, almost self-sacrificially in times, and then enjoying ourselves with all that can be bought. It is a bizarre balance, and it's one we all know well. We are surrounded by delicious, caloric food in grocery stores and restaurants, at parties and snack tables. But we know that good people don't eat very much of it. We are sinful if we do. It is not healthy. We must fight temptation of that surrounding stuff with willpower, considered to be such a strong and positive trait in our society. This is all relevant to the complicated question of how we plan our days and our purpose. Are we meant to savor the world or save it? Do we use our attention, time, and resources to savor life? Do we delight in it? Do we seek pleasure and joy? How important is this for a meaningful life? Or do we use our attention, time, and resources to make the world a better, kinder place? Is this our ultimate obligation? To help fix the climate, take down fascism, and deal with this despairing mess that we are in? How important is this for a meaningful life? This is E.B. White's teeter-totter, to either savor or save. And to balance a teeter-totter, to stand in the middle and hold the board aloft on both sides, well, that's hard to do. I have spent a great deal of my life living the back and forth described by E.B. White and often feeling guilty about whatever choice I make. I should love life more, take my pleasure in this experience of living. I should be doing more to fix whatever I just read about or witnessed. It's pretty much exhausting as the teeter-totter slams to the ground one way or another. Well, the good news is, this is just a story. This savoring versus saving dichotomy is just one way to frame and understand and talk about our experience. The challenge comes when we frame our life in terms of my delight versus making the world better for everyone else. Gilbert even talks about this. He says, "Drink from the bitter cup of my neighbor," versus dealing with his own joy. It's a me versus them story, sprinkled with the cultural message that hard work is good and too much delight and joy is bad. Well, it's okay, but it should be tempered. It should be tempered. And this is a very difficult story to negotiate. Fortunately, we can tell other stories that help us decide how we will spend our day. Both Richard Gilbert and Andrea Marie Brown, authors of this morning's readings, give us other stories that offer more possibilities. Gilbert concludes in his response to E.B. White that the dichotomy is a false one. To save, one must serve, he says, and to savor, one must save. In other words, in order to savor, he must serve. He prays, "Forgive me with my preoccupation with myself, in my concern for my own life. I had forgotten." What has Gilbert forgotten? He has forgotten that he is part of the world. "Forgive me, God of justice," he prays. "Forgive me and make me whole." Gilbert comes to understand that serving and savoring make the world whole and thus make him whole. And most of us have had these experiences. We have loved someone, delighted in them, savored our time with them. And when this person needed our care and our service, we did what was required. the savoring and the service blended, becoming the whole of the relationship. We experience this with children and grandchildren, certainly, but also with partners and siblings and parents and friends and others. Maybe we delight in a community. We so enjoy having our family together that we will work hard to cook Thanksgiving dinner or plan the summer reunion. We delight in WOOF here with its good people and opportunities to grow and learn. So we make coffee and we teach RE and we serve on the board. We serve what we savor. Or maybe it is a piece of land that we delight in. So we love it and we care for it. In none of these cases is there an us versus them. What we savor and what we serve are the same. What is in our heart, what connects us to other, is where we put our labor, our time, our energy. We serve what we savor, and in a beautiful alchemy, we savor more deeply that which we serve. What we struggle with in Western cultures is how much the world we have pushed outside of us, so we don't have these same savor and serve relationships with so much of what exists. People who are different from us are them. We may have empathy for them. We may feel dreadful if our culture makes their lives challenging and hard. And for many people, that is the true experience. But in this case, to serve is not serving what we savor. It is an act of duty and kindness and generosity. Unless we once lived in the streets or in our car or someone we care about deeply does, to devote life energy finding solutions for those experiencing homelessness is not about serving what delights us. It may feel good and it may feel right and it gives our lives meaning, but we don't necessarily consider it to be a delight or a pleasure. It is that work that we need to do. It becomes part of that savor or serve dichotomy. We change the story by how we frame what it means to exist and what our ultimate connections are to. We can cultivate delight in almost anything. We can notice what gives joy and pleasure to our own hearts. Ross Gay, a poet, wrote the Book of Delight, where he recorded the small and large delights of his everyday. He discovered that attending to his delight grew his delight. Anyone can do this. You can notice and name delights each day and become more in love with the world because you're noticing the way we are bonded to it. Notice that when you delight in something, you feel a connection. It's like the beginning of love. And we serve what delights us easily. It's not work, it's pleasure. I was once so lucky to be in the Arctic, where I got to see whales bubble net feed. They gathered in a circle deep in the water, and you could tell where it was going to be because the birds went insane over this piece of water, and then the water began to froth as the whales blew bubbles. They blow the bubbles up and they trap all the fish inside, and then they came exploding up out of the water and as they ate the fish. So it was like these 8 whales just coming up out of the water at once. It was freaking amazing, a miracle. It was a delight and a joy. We were on the ship, and everyone is utterly, completely silent until they all come out, and then we're all screaming. It was amazing. So whenever I think about climate change and environmental destruction, it is those whales that break my heart. How could humans destroy such a miracle as this? And this, fundamentally, is the problem with cultivating delight. It can break your heart. That is why we serve what we savor, because what we most enjoy, we want what we most enjoy to flourish. And it is not always our choice whether it flourishes or it does not. It is easier, perhaps, to withdraw into one's own world, where delight and joy are muted by the routines of the day. It may be easiest to feel comfortable and also somewhat numb. Because while I know how to care for a sick child, I can feel pretty helpless when it comes to making the world safe for those whales. So perhaps it is even easier to attend to our suffering, the way things don't go our way, our losses, our betrayals, our grief, what irritates us, our fear, as well as the suffering of others that we notice. We can be angry and lash out that that's the truth of the world. It's easy to become heavy with it and to be surprised sometimes by joy and delight and laughter when they happen, which they will. Can't help it, we're human. But then we allow them to fade away and settle again to attend to the suffering. Adrian Marie Brown in this morning's reading suggests that we flip the situation. She says, put your attention on joy, being connected, and feeling whole. In other words, spend your precious life cultivating your precious life energy, cultivating delight and joy, noticing it wherever you go. Your heart will break, she writes. You will know grief, but you will find it a reasonable cost for the random abundance of miracles and the soft, wild rhythms of love. Brown, a black activist and writer, is part of a group of thought leaders who are asking us all to experiment with ways of being human that are not based on productivity, hard work, miserly pleasure and joy, those vestiges of Calvinism and colonial culture that haunt us all, but instead recognizing life is foundationally a miracle to enjoy. Which spins us around to Gilbert, again to Gilbert, who says, to be whole, we serve what we love and what we savor. Savoring, serving, delighting in creating, it is all just love in action. What delights us makes us glow and come to life. It offers us energy. When we are energized and alive, we can offer our glowing back to the world. It's not a teeter-totter. It's a blazing light. Unitarian Universalists encourage each other's spiritual growth and a responsible search for truth and meaning. Right now, I think we're being asked to consider how different worldviews and ideas about life's purpose might change our relationships to the earth and to each other. The old Calvinist story about hard work and limited joy made colonization, genocide, and slavery and environmental destruction possible. And while we've grown away from some of the absolute worst of that, we still live in the culture that makes that possible. And there are forms of that that still exist. We have to change laws and the economic system to fix those things fundamentally. But as part of that process, we need to reconstruct our relationship to life. We need a new worldview and understanding of what it means to live in the web of life well. This, attending to delight and joy, seems utterly worth trying to me. I mean, it's all an experiment at this point. We don't exactly know what we're doing because we're trying something new. It's always a gamble. But this is a process of falling in love with life and then serving it in ways so it continues to flourish. It is a process of bringing your glow to the world and letting the world glow back and fill you up. It is the process of serving what we savor and savoring more all the time. And why not? We have nothing to lose at this point. So let us sing. Now let us sing to the joy within. Kim and Brad and Cheyenne will help us. The words will be on the screen, but it's also 368 in the...
Now let us sing, 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 sing. Now let us sing, 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 sing. Lift up your voice, be not afraid. Now let us sing to the power of the faith within. Now let us sing,
sing to the power
sing,
of the
sing,
faith
sing.
Sing.
Now let us sing,
sing to the power
sing,
of the
sing,
faith
sing.
Within.
Lift up your voice,
lift up your voice.
Be not afraid.
Be not afraid.
Now let us sing,
sing
to the power of the hope within. Now let us sing,
sing to the power
sing,
of the
sing,
love within.
Lift up your voice.
Actually, that's the deal. They say, be not afraid. And that is part of living with delight and love. It's allowing yourself to be not afraid. Our closing words are from Portland writer Brian Doyle. He wrote this. We are here only for a minute. We're here for a little window. And to use that time to catch and share shards of light and laughter and grace seems to me the great story. So may this tale of grace and delight be the one that you use in all of your lives. We extinguish this flame, but not the vision and the compassion of our faith. Let us stay with it, all of you, until we meet again. Now we will rise and sing Carry the Flame. We're not going to use the video today. So we will all rise. The people in the front will face the back. The people in the back will face the front.